Stay in your homes. Stay in your homes. Live from the Fenfoot Group Studio in Mapletown, USA, it's Necro Nevapod with your hosts, Christopher and Mike Moncada. Episode of Anniversary 60, Sherry Priest, the Bone Shaker. The story of a man and a woman and the naughty things that happen when a man
what'd you get me?
You know, you forgot our anniversary.
I got you a cocktail. Just like every time.
That's why get out of here. A toaster is not romantic.
Wow, 4 years, 60 yeah. Episodes.
So we were thinking. You and I were talking just before we hit the play button here, the record button here. That, you know, well, it's been like 3 years. No, we are just about to head into our fifth year.
Mm-hmm.
We just get older.
It's our polyester anniversary.
Older. The wicker anniversary.
For the wicker man. The wicker man anniversary.
The Mylar anniversary.
But you think we'd run out of, we would have run out of things to talk about. Then this might be the book where it actually happens.
No, I pretty much have run out a while ago.
I know, I've been covering for you.
Thank you so much. Yeah, no, it's shocking. I mean, I should actually, just as a sort of an experiment, go back and listen to that very first episode.
Oh my God, I couldn't.
Which was a book that was one of the best ones we read.
We liked the book, but audio quality was probably rotten.
It was awful.
We should probably recreate that.
No. No, we'll let it stand as a testament to our ineptitude. As really every episode has been.
Actually, yeah, we don't aim for... We're just making farts in the... back of the class.
We're making fart noises in the back of the class. Anyway, so hey, we got another comment today. Did you see that?
No.
Yeah, no.
Was it good?
No. One of our listeners suggested that we read another Thomas Ligotti book. Specifically, My Work Is Not Yet Done.
Who was this person?
I don't think the person has posted before. No. I can't remember. I was just reading it on the bus as I was coming home. And he was suggesting that we read Thomas Ligotti's latest.
Already read that?
I have already read it. It's a fine piece of work.
Maybe I'll interview you about it.
Or you could just read it, and I can reread it, and we could talk about it sometime in the near future.
Okay. Like a special episode or something.
Yeah. Well, when we're really, really sick of our jobs.
Well.
Because it's a
horror. I should have read it 2 weeks ago.
Because it's a horror story about work.
Oh.
Yeah. Which can be pretty horrible. Anyway, so thank you for that comment.
Keep them coming.
Keep them coming. And we have taken suggestions in the past from readers. Listeners to read a book, and we'll do it again. It's kind of fun.
Yeah,
we get good recommendations. So, at any rate, today's book.
Yeah, who recommended this stinker? Lead Balloon.
It was me.
Yeah.
This book came with highly recommended from people that I respect.
Who were those people?
It was Cory Doctorow. Oh, yeah. Anyway, I bought this book a couple of years, about a year and a half ago. And
I've been wanting to read it.
It's been sitting on my shelf, and I kept, showing it to you. And say, hey, let's read this one next. And finally, you said yes. And we read it. Bone Shaker by Sherry Priest. I didn't much care for it.
Oh, we're going right into it.
Oh, no, we're not. We're going to talk about something else. Let's talk about...
Why don't we say what the book was about? Because nobody's going to have...
Well,
it's a way to waste time.
Honestly, I think there's a good chance that more people will have read this book than many of the books that we choose. Because this was actually a pretty successful book. Because it is sort of one of the leading lights of the steampunk movement.
It is. I read that.
Yeah. And... And so that's, I mean, you know, I know a little bit about steampunk. I've seen people at a convention or two wearing top hats and goggles and spats and God knows what. And so this is one of the books that people point to when they say this is, you know, this new literary movement going on out there, and I wanted to take a taste.
So when I was reading this book,
yes,
I kept thinking there was something wrong with me because I could not get into it. I could not, for some reason, I could not enter this book in the ways I like to enter books.
I had that exact same.
And I was thinking, well, is it like the winter, I can't concentrate, you know, that happens sometimes in the winter.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
am I not getting enough sleep?
Is it the methadone?
Is it the lack of sunlight? What is it? I can't. It's like I would read the words and they would not stick in my brain.
Yeah.
I have very little sense of the characters. I can't remember the plot.
The scenes would have no velocity.
Velocity, that's a good word.
Yeah. I mean, it's I'm sorry. I really wanted to like this book. I really did.
I gave up a big chunk of my life to read it.
Yeah, I mean,
it had a lot of great elements. It was like an alternative history,
yep.
Seattle.
There
was a mother son,
yep.
Kind of a YA,
yep.
Kind
had
of thing going on there.
It had that thing going on. It had
there was
airships.
A windless woman.
It had airships.
It had zombies and poison gas and sort of like a Jules Verne.
Yeah.
A Thousand Leagues Under the. Whatever it is, Under the Sea.
20,000 Leagues Under the Sea.
Yeah. Kind of that crazed,
yep.
Genius.
All of that.
Death, politics,
family,
civil war,
family secrets. I mean, it had
so many things.
It had so many things, and I could just hear the pitch meeting at the publisher saying, you know, steampunk's really hot right now, and so here's the I'm gonna write this novel. It's gonna have a it's gonna have a drilling machine like journey to the center of the earth. It's gonna have dirigibles. It's gonna have zombies,
and zeppelins,
dirigibles, zeppelins, and airships,
and air supply.
And it's gonna have
people have to wear masks.
Yeah,
to survive.
No, because one of the big fetish objects of the steampunk movement is the gas masks and the goggles. And so it's a freaking plot point. It's written into the book that people have to wear gas masks freaking all the time.
And like,
I get all fetishy about that.
And a cool word for zombie, rotters.
Rotters, which is a very good word for
zombies. It's a very good word. Why haven't we used it before?
I don't know. I mean, marketing-wise, as far as like a prospectus, the publisher must have jumped all over this.
And there was
book.
A map.
And there was a map. There wasn't that.
Like a book with a map.
Yeah. So I started reading this book too, and I had the exact same experience. I would sit down and I would read. I would pull through a chapter. I'd have to go back and start a couple paragraphs again because the words had just slipped by. And I got to like page 200 or so, and I was like, I don't remember how this book started. So what I did is I went out and I got the audiobook, and I started again and listen to the whole thing again,
and
still the book had no purchase on my brain. Now that it could be if
that's what I'm wondering, is it our brains?
It could be my brain.
Have we crossed that line?
I may have crossed that line, but let's just say, for instance, that I have not, as you already have, that I have not, but we have still had the same experience. So I'm thinking that this book is just,
well, what is it?
I think it's
Was it the brown print? No, because you listened to it.
Well, yeah. First, I was reading it, and then I listened to it. But it's just too heavily positioned. I mean, it's actually a perfect book to get. I mean, because publishers, they don't care if you read the damn thing; they just want you to pay money for it.
Yeah. I can totally see it being a movie too.
Oh yeah, you know, it actually would probably be a good movie.
Probably would probably be a better movie, but
yeah.
It wouldn't. Yeah.
But. So So I was very disappointed. You have notes.
No. I'm bored. I was looking at my schedule for tomorrow.
Here, Dr. Mancada needed to quick check his schedule for tomorrow. Good God. Okay, so other aspects of the book.
Wait. Let's go back to something else.
About being bored.
Talk about the brown print.
Also, that was done. I mean, the cover art was great.
Yeah, it was.
It was fantastic. And the cover art for the sequel, Dreadnought, is even better. But so you get the, so you have the person in the bookstore. They go to the sci-fi section, and maybe he has his face out, or maybe it's even on the table in the sci-fi section, or it's on the book on the row end, and maybe somebody has put together a list of books. Steampunk, this is hot. So this book is out there, and you pick it up, and you're like, oh, this looks great. And you open it up, and it's in brown print. And you think, oh, that is so steampunk.
Which is where, when I opened it, that's what I thought. This is cool, brown print.
Yeah, and you know, actually, it didn't bother me. At first, it kind of bothered me, but after about a chapter or two, I was good with it. You know what they could have done? They could have put Dr. Minerick's words in red print, like the words of Jesus,
and then one word like.
every time the word rotters showed up, it would be in blue, or the word house. No wait, that's
the, right. The word dirigible. In blue. Whoever you are,
there we go, making fart noises in the back of the classroom again.
Go back to the. You said that this is a well-positioned book, and that's why it didn't stick.
Well, no, that's why I think it's a bestseller. That's why I think people talk about it.
Uh-huh. Do people talk about it?
They talked about it when it first came out.
Oh.
And it sold really well. Uh-huh. And you know, if I would sit here and like have read the book and you know kept my opinion about it to myself and just sort of gave you the synopsis, you'd be really excited about it.
Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah, well, yeah, but you would. You probably would be.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, man, that sounds great. I have to go read this book. But the actual experience of plowing through this book was very unpleasant.
And it wasn't a horror book.
Well, no, it wasn't a horror book.
It wasn't.
It used the horror elements, horror spices. It's an alternative history. It's a sci-fi book.
It's more of a adventure book.
Mm-hmm. I would say it's a straight up adventure book.
Yeah.
But I have to say, I mean, there's a couple of set pieces in here. There's there's a dirigible battle. There's the rotter battles. There's a couple of running gun battles. There's some crazy chases across upsides of buildings and stuff like that. And I read those scenes, and those are supposed to be really exciting.
Yeah. I don't remember them.
They were boring. They were boring.
Partly because you didn't know what was going
on. I know.
You didn't know what was going on.
And I've been thinking about
this. I don't
know
if that's the writing style, or it is the writing style. It has to be.
I was thinking about this. I'm like, why did these scenes not grab me? I mean, when I got to the very end of the book, we've been dangled this secret, this big secret, all the way through the book. You know, what happened to Leviticus Blue? Why does Briar? What is her big secret? What has she not been telling her son? What is she going to tell her son? And you know what? When I thought about it for a second, I'm like, of course, that's exactly what happened. Leviticus, I mean, she says he's a bad guy, and they say that you know the bone shaker had gone through a bunch of bank vaults. Duh, of course that's what he was doing. He was stealing money from the bank vaults. I didn't know exactly that she had shot him in the back of the head, but that was the big secret. Of course she knows he's dead because she killed him. Now, what did you think of...
And then what was really funny is the mom then says to the son, well, are you like... It was kind of like, well, are you mad He's like, no.
No.
I gotta be mad at you. And that was it. It's like, oh, okay.
I know. There was more to be done there.
I think part of the other problem of the writing was, I don't know why, but in this case, the back and forth story didn't work.
No.
Between the mom and the... She should have stuck with one point of view and then stayed there.
Yeah, you know, and in the audiobook version, there was actually two narrators, and I can't remember who it was, a female narrator for the Briar Wilkes, the Briar Blue chapters, and then Will Wheaton did Zeke, and he was pretty, I mean, they're both really great. I've heard both of them read before in audiobooks. They're both really fantastic. So I can't even fault the readers. I can't even fault, because they were very dynamic and very, they did the voices and everything like that. The writing was so static. And I was, and
what does that mean?
It just didn't have any, it didn't propel you to the next sentence. And the paragraphs didn't propel you to the next paragraph. And when you got to the end of a chapter, you're like, okay, another one down. And that is not a positive, that's no way to...
So what makes writing, what's the difference between a sentence or a paragraph that propels you and one that keeps things in stasis?
Oh, you know, I might be over my head here, because...
Come on, you're an English major.
I was an English major. Now I'm just a guy. It's different things. But remember, I'm thinking back to another book that we both freaking hated. But
House?
No. But that book had we hated that one too. That one also had no velocity at all. That one failed. That was probably the worst book we ever read. But
another book, The Conqueror Worm.
The Conqueror Worm, which we both hated, but that book had some velocity.
Yeah.
It was, I mean, the plot was, it was so plot driven, and the description was so, I mean, it just gave you what you needed to know to move to the next scene. It was very skeletal. And I remember being annoyed by that at the time, but you know, maybe the description in this, while it wasn't super thick, like I'm thinking of like really ponderous continental novels, like something by Marcel Proust,
or
where it's like 500 pages of describing, you know, having a conversation, or like Henry James,
or Martin, or is it Amos?
Is it Amos? Martin Amos.
Martin Amos.
Yeah, Martin Amos. I haven't read him in a long time, so I don't even remember what he's like. But that kind of thick description where you're supposed to linger on the page and enjoy the unfolding of the sentences. Or actually, like Virginia Woolf, who's a writer that I really enjoy. Mm-hmm. But Virginia Woolf, actually, you know, I was going to say that Virginia Woolf would never write a zombie novel, but I'm hoping that Seth Graham Smith is hearing this and is going to write a Mrs. Dalloway versus the zombies, to the lighthouse of the undead, or something like that.
Or they bring Virginia Woolf back from the dead and make her write as a zombie,
or just write a Virginia werewolf book.
Who's Afraid of Virginia Werewolf?
There you go.
I want to see that play.
Anyway. But that kind of writing, which I love, I really do love that kind of
right, because it's atmospheric.
It's very atmospheric. It's it's musical.
This was not atmospheric.
It wasn't that. It kind of failed in the atmosphere, department. It failed in the plot department. The plot was pretty damn rickety. For instance, let's go for the plot for a second.
Okay.
The whole thing with Dr. Minerith, mm-hmm. Who reminded me of nothing more than a Johnny Quest villain.
Well, that's funny. That's true. Or Clutch Cargo. I'm thinking more of a Clutch Cargo villain.
Exactly. I mean, he was absolutely cartoonish, which is
fine. It's fine.
I would be happy with him being freaking Dr. Horrible. But the rest of the book it didn't fit with that. It just didn't fit. So when he finally unmasks himself, not literally unmasks himself, but in that last scene when Briar confronts him and says, I know that you're not him because I know that Leviticus Blue is dead. And then his mom shows up and kills him. And that whole unmasking, that whole, you know, untangling of that contrived mystery of, you know, is he Leviticus Blue or not? Reminded me of nothing more so much as the end of a Scooby-Doo cartoon.
But here's the thing. Now, I didn't care.
And I didn't care. You know what I'm saying?
And I didn't care. I didn't care. Like, is he Leviticus Blue? Is he not Leviticus Blue? I don't care if he's Cher's son.
Yeah, he could be Oscar. What's his name? Oscar Wilde or John Wilkes Booth. I don't fucking care.
I didn't care. I was like, yeah, all right.
Fine.
If he is, if he isn't, what is it going to matter? It
doesn't matter.
That's what it felt like.
That's what it felt like. Absolutely.
And there was that scene, you know, I just kept seeing those 1960s, 50s, maybe late 50s, the villain, the genius villain, and you go into their underground.
Dr. No,
There's chandeliers and zombie servants, and it just felt like one of those.
Yeah.
Which would be fun.
Which would be super fun. But it was well done.
It wasn't. Yeah, and I wish I could. I wish I could pinpoint why it wasn't well done, because I feel if I'm going to criticize something, I need, other than what it felt like, I need to say.
Yes, I know, because
that doesn't feel right to me.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right. We're totally copping out here. I'm gonna try to find another one. For instance, here's a specific plot failing that bugged the shit out of me. Dr. Minarek, his real name is something Irish, I can't remember, Joe
Smith or Joe Brown or
something
Joe
like that.
O'Reilly or
crap. I was going to write it down and remember it.
Sorry.
Joe something. And he's not as smart as he seems to be. So we're told, because he's been stealing all of Leviticus Blue's plans and his inventions. Yet, he has actually...
He, like, fixed that woman's...
Yeah, he just freaking did it. He does have some aptitude. So the author's having it both ways.
He's created this whole kind of world where he's the ruler.
Yeah, I mean, he's... I did not believe that he was... That as a fraud, that he was as much of a fraud as we were told he was supposed to be.
And then I go back to this. I didn't care.
And then I didn't care.
Yeah. I think part of the not caring, I think even in a good high adventure book, mm-hmm. you find a character that you can at least sidle up to.
Yes.
That I didn't get that. You don't stick long enough with somebody. You would think even the person you probably could identify the most, because there was the most kind of emotion, was the boy. Yeah, and his seeking out his father. But I think the problem is that the intro to him leaving, it happens pretty quickly into the book.
Mm-hmm.
And so you don't get a sense of that this kid's suffering.
Yeah.
So it propels him to leave. You just get sort of like he's a kind of a brat.
He's kind of a brat.
So you needed that extra sort of layer underneath to say, okay, this kid not knowing, having a belief about his dad, and his mother withholding the information from him,
uh-huh.
creates this vacuum, which is very painful
yes.
to him.
Plus, you know, it would have been good for him to have a scene with his friends.
Yes.
That a scene with that group that he hangs out with. Just one scene.
Yes.
That would have been very helpful.
Yes.
I was going to say that I actually did identify with Briar more than anybody else in the book.
Huh.
I found some of the other characters, the guy with the blunderbuss, the loud noise thing.
Jonathan?
Yes. And some of the dirigible captains,
Captain Dirigible.
Captain Dirigible. and
Sergeant Sergeant Zeppelin.
Sergeant Zeppelin. And the Native American woman. Princess Angeline. Angeline and Lucy, the woman with the mechanical.
I do think I like Lucy the best.
Lucy is pretty awesome.
I liked her.
The whole book, the outline of the book, the scenes, like the settings, like that underground like bar that Lucy runs.
Yeah, I like that too.
And the cruise of the Zeppelins and stuff like that.
But you're not with them long enough.
Yeah, you
don't enter the world.
You don't enter that world. Yeah. You don't enter the world. And it's I wonder if perhaps the basic flaw of the book, the thing that keeps it from working is that it is too high concept.
Well, I think the thing that didn't keep it says the peril didn't feel tangible enough. I don't know how else to put it. Even, you know, if you don't have the gas, for some reason it didn't seem dangerous enough.
That's true.
Like you would get that somehow. That I don't know where they could put it. It just didn't feel dangerous enough.
Didn't feel dangerous.
Even though there was supposedly all this danger.
Yeah, no character that you really care about dies or is
Jonathan.
Jonathan does.
But I didn't care about him. I didn't care. I didn't really know him.
Well, he's kind of like the romantic interest. But at the end of the book, he is spirited away by Lucy and is taken to.
We don't know he dies.
We don't know what happens with him. Dies.
Do we know what happens?
We don't. We don't.
Sequel.
If I stumble across an audiobook of the sequel of Dreadnought, I might give it a listen. But as you know, I have lots to listen to now. Lots.
Right. But you know what? It didn't even stick with me that Jonathan was a romantic character.
Well, he was.
Oh my god!
He was a romantic character.
I failed this book,
but only in the most because a spot opened up in the plot where the romantic character fits.
And he never entered her vagina. That was the problem.
Well, no, and that's the character who shows up. Yeah. And that's it. The plots at work kind of like basic machines. And there are slots that things need to fit in, and that slot opened up, and
which sometimes can work.
Oh, it totally can work. In fact, the reason that they're there is because it works. But it didn't really. I don't know. This steampunk engine is blows a gasket. and it's just stumbling around like a damn rotter.
Rotter, but I'm gonna keep that word because I like it.
It's a good word. We're gonna use it. We'll use it in the next episode, even if it's horribly out of context.
So, anything else?
Okay, this is a steampunk book. Have you read any other steampunk works? I know for sure that you've read one.
I read the graphic novel of.
Oh, League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. Yes, Gentlemen. Of course. Yeah, that's a good one.
Which is steampunkish.
Very, very much so.
I happen to think.
Did you read any of the?
I happen to think Robert Louis Stevenson's Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde is steampunk.
Yeah. Well, basically, steampunk is basically trying to like write stories that as if they had been written in
Jules Verne,
Robert Louis Stevenson, H.G. Wells. Yeah. Even earlier or even a little bit later. Have you read any Jules Verne?
Long, when I was a kid.
Yeah, I haven't read any.
I don't remember.
I haven't read any recently.
Read one.
Well, you and I could, but not for this podcast.
Why?
Because they're not even remotely horror.
But we read this.
Well, it had zombies in it.
I don't know. Mysterious Island has monsters.
It does. That has a new translation. Well, within the last decade.
No, I want to read it in old French.
Well, no, but the original translation is from like the 20s or 30s, and that's what the only thing that English readers read for the longest time, and it wasn't a very good translation. Apparently, the new translation really does bring out the original book quite well.
Oh, what else did we read from here that, or did that I read that you know of that it was?
The very first of the Philip Pullman, His Dark Materials books.
Oh yeah, those were sort of.
Yeah, because they had because it was an alternative.
He wouldn't call it that, but
no, but they have been lumped into the steampunk genre. Because, you know, especially see it in the movie, because the mode of transport for the wealthy is airships,
kind of electric.
Yeah, the science they call it. What do they call the instead of electricity? They call it
I don't remember
something else. But it's philosophy. It's very steampunky. But I had read some other steampunk, not books, but like. Stories here and there, and they can be really exciting and really great.
I like League of Extraordinary.
Oh, those Gentlemen. Are those are fantastic graphic novels. And so when I chose this, I had every reason to think that we'd be sitting here having a lively discussion about an awesome book. I am very sad to say that we are not.
Well, there you go.
There you go.
I have nothing more. I can't say anymore because it would just be saying the same thing.
Yeah, I know. We'd just be bitching. I wish we had been. But we're done with that now. You know what time it is?
I might need to let it go. Oh! Is it in red? I would say it's cocktail time.
It is indeed cocktail time. There's really only one thing that we can use for a cocktail and it's the name
which they didn't explore enough in the book.
They really didn't. I would love to have found out about more about the whole addiction culture of yellow sap.
Oh, you know that now that I'm thinking I think China medieval book is sort of steampunky.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah,
it kind of is.
Well, no, yeah, totally. But it's so very much more.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's the genre that they've invented to lump that one in is called New Weird.
Oh, Lord, I can't keep
I know, I can't. Don't even
these mind. Young kids and their
kids with their genres and drugs.
So, we're drinking.
Hey, we're going to drink some yellow sap.
Because,
You know, in the book, yellow sap is the narcotic that that is being peddled from the distilled gas that has that creates the rotters
right
in ruined Seattle.
What's in this yellow sap?
Well, let me tell you. Because
I taste some citrus.
There is a bit of citrus. What you want to do, because this is a old timey and
we're a monocle
in the Wild West, you gotta start with rye whiskey. Mm-hmm. So take a shot of rye whiskey. Then you wanna make it kind of yellow. Sappy. So take some Galliano, which was in every all of our parents' liquor cabinets in the 70s because you know you had to have a Harvey Wallbanger fixing in the 70s. So Galliano, it's the one that looks like the bottle that looks kind of like the Eiffel Tower that you know you have to. It's hard to like fit behind the bar because it's
tall.
Like 3 feet tall. Yeah. Anyway, Galliano, you can get a small one now. And then a little bit of orange juice. I like to put it, to keep the orange juice kind of low, like less than a shot.
I like it a little bit more.
Exactly. So just mix all those together with ice and drink it. And, you know, just put it in a rocks glass with ice and stir it up and drink it down.
I think it's also good with pineapple juice.
One could also put pineapple juice in there. It would make it even yellow and sappier.
Yeah.
But don't drink too much because it'll
Perhaps it already has.
Perhaps it already has.
Well, there you go.
There you go. Cocktail Man.
A kind of half-assed cocktail for a half-assed book. Chin.
Actually, no, just chin.
Just chin. All right. Let's head down to the basement.
All right. Because this is...
I really don't want to do that book.
You really don't?
No.
You really don't? But it's our fourth anniversary. It's been sitting on the freaking books on the table for four years.
All right, here we go.
4 years it has been on the table.
This is the stankiest, mustiest part of the basement.
It might be good. You don't know.
Anything that's written by Michael Jackson's sister, I don't know if I can trust that.
I don't think Michael Jackson... Actually, did Michael Jackson have a sister?
Yeah. Janet, LaToya, and Reba, and Shirley.
And Shirley. Everybody forgets about Shirley.
She's a forgotten one. Because she couldn't sing a lick.
She couldn't sing
at all. She just sat in the corner and wrote.
And wrote. So, yes. At long last... We are finally
people have been clamoring.
The clamoring. We were finally going to read the Shirley Jackson novel.
Woohoo.
Who? We're gonna read We Have Always Lived in the Castle by Shirley Jackson, which is a classic horror novel.
You know, I've given into so many of your books lately.
I know.
Because I can't come up with one.
You have to show up here prepared sometime.
I will, because...
Didn't you bring Angelology to us?
Yes, I did.
My case, she rests. I've poisted some shit bombs on us, too.
Mostly.
So.
Mostly. Okay, so Shirley Jackson's We Have Always Lived in the Castle. Can it be gotten at the library, do you think?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's in print now. It's been in print ever since you published it in the 50s, I guess.
Okay. All right, let's get out of here. I think there's some yellow gas down here. Oh, no, that was me. Right.
Oh, my God, are we done?
Yeah.
So what you been up to lately?
Well, nothing much.
Not altogether too much.
Not too much, but I did. I have put Buffy down for a while, but now I've picked her back up again.
How so?
Well, because there was an omnibus,
yeah.
Of some graphic. I don't know if they're called graphic novels. I don't know what they're called, but sort of
picture books.
Mangas of different of stories, offshoot stories. So
sure.
I found this omnibus at the library, and so I read through those, and those were great. And
cool.
There was only three of them, and I think there's 10 of them, but I only found three of them.
Wow,
those were great. And then the Joss Whedon had put out the season 8 as a
that's right.
Comic book.
Season 8 is done now, right?
Apparently,
yeah.
But and I was getting the comic books, and then I just sort of lost interest. But they made it into one of those comic, comic animations.
Oh,
I forget what that's called. A comic.
Yeah, it was just an anime, like a limited motion comic.
Right.
Yeah.
But, and it's of the first 20.
Okay.
Of those, there's 40 books, there's 40 issues total.
Wow.
And he did the first 20. I'm hoping they're going to come up with the next 20.
Wow.
And it's not any of the original voices or anything like that. But I'll tell you, it's pretty damn good.
Really?
Yeah. And even, and I didn't mind, you know, I was reading some reviews of it, and lots of people were really disappointed that it wasn't a full animation, but... If you give over to that form,
yeah,
it's an interesting form to watch and participate in, and I didn't mind it. In fact, it makes you use your there's a part of your brain that the gestalt part of your brain is filling in
things
all the time,
yeah,
which I don't mind.
It's
when it's done well. And I've seen some of those that I didn't like. Broken Saints was one of them.
Oh yeah, I couldn't make it through that one.
I was kind of bored with it. But there's so much action in these, and the characters, while they don't really totally sound like the original actors, then their nuance is there, and that's that's good enough.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting.
That's all you're going to get.
I'm pretty interested in seeing that because, I mean...
Yeah, we'll watch it. But I'll bring it over.
Yeah, there's a place in between, like, reading and watching, you know, a movie. I mean, that kind of occupies. And if you can, like, give yourself over to that, like you were saying, it's perfectly...
There's all sorts of different visual forms, you know, you can enjoy. So, I've got nothing more, and I think we need to stop.
Okay, we're gonna stop because. So,
let's shoot an arrow at it and watch it come down from the sky.
Shoot it come down from the sky, and then we'll strap a gas mask on it.
No, we'll take the gas mask off.
Take the gas mask off of it and
throw it over the wall.
And throw it over the wall, and then stop. Then we'll just freaking stop.
We'll just laugh at it.
And then we'll laugh at it. We'll point and laugh.
We'll be right back.
still, we did 48 minutes of nothing.
Of nothing. I want you to cut it down to 12.